Hi, Smart Habits for Translators listeners. Before we jump into today's episode, we want to share an exciting giveaway with you. To say thank you for your support over the last 6 months since we started our podcast in October 2019. As you'll remember, Susie Jackson joined us in episode 12, Financial Habits for a Healthy Business. We'd like to offer one winner a one-on-one financial mentoring session with Susie, covering any of the following: budgeting for your business expenses, paying yourself a consistent salary, implementing the Profit First system, charging enough for your services, or being organized with invoicing. You can enter the giveaway from May 5th to May 19th, 2020. To enter, go to smarthabitsfortranslators.com/giveaway. That's G-I-V-E-A-W-A-Y. Enter your email on that page and follow the instructions. We'll contact the winner after the giveaway ends and announce it on the podcast. We'll also make sure to link to the giveaway in the show notes for today's episode. And now on to today's conversation. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we will focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Ampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 17. Before we start, here is a review from our colleague Natasha Devos, a translator and interpreter between Dutch and French based in France. Natasha shared these kind words on LinkedIn recently. Want to know what life is like after 10 weeks of isolation? Check out this special episode of Smart Habits for Translators with Sarah Maria Hasbun, who lives in Beijing. Thank you, Veronica and Madalena, for yet another great podcast.
And thank you so much for listening and for sharing our podcast with others, Natasha. We've been overwhelmed, actually, with positive feedback about episode 14 on smart habits during social isolation with Sarah Maria Hasbun. I think her experience in Beijing during this time helped us to understand what it's like to spend several months in social isolation, as well as what you can gain from the experience that leaves you feeling more fulfilled and grounded. So now let's get to the topic of today's episode, which is coping with quiet work periods. This topic was a request from one of our listeners, and we thought it would likely apply to the current situation when many of us are feeling a lull in our work, or maybe even just some patchy spots when work is busy for a week and then completely quiet the next week. And that's a lot right now because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the effects on the global economy, but also this can just happen, you know, in everyday life. So we'll also talk about other situations when you might experience a quiet work period, like during the holidays or summer vacation, or those times when you just have unresponsive clients. Whatever the reason, seeing your list of incoming projects grow smaller or drying up completely can be panic-inducing, but it doesn't have to be that way. So today we're going to share our perspective and tips on how to get through these quiet work periods successfully by employing some smart habits. So one of the things that I like to think about when I have a slow work period, and they happen to all of us, is that this will not always be this way. And it's funny to even actually have to verbalize that, but it does sometimes feel when you're in the middle of a slow work period that it's never going to end. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've talked to other translators too, and you probably have as well, Veronica, that they say, you know, oh my gosh, I don't know when my next project is coming in. And, right. You know, they start to feel, you know, feelings of maybe imposter syndrome or something, you know, when will my clients start contacting me again, and mm-hmm. so on. And part of this is very normal to think that way. But another perspective is to think, well, your work doesn't have to happen to you, right? It could be something that you actually proactively seek.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong, right, with marketing your business, with looking for new clients. And that's something, you know, we'll probably talk about that again today, but something that you can definitely do while you have a slow work period.
Yeah. And I feel that it may be especially nerve-wracking for people right now, just because of the situation we're in. And there's this uncertainty about the economic impact worldwide and some industries that are hit very hard. But I feel that in general, a slowdown in work can make people feel anxious and panicky. And at times I feel this way too. And it's easy to start questioning yourself right away and wondering what happened, whether you did something wrong. You know, you start blaming yourself, comparing yourself to others, or even like going down the rabbit hole of what if I never get any work again? Like you said, you know, start coming up with all this what if scenarios. So I feel that it's very important to just start with taking a deep breath and thinking about this in a calm, constructive manner. I should also say that when this happens to me after a long, intense period of work, then I actually feel grateful for the pause and welcome a short break. And I think often, especially if you are used to this intense rhythm of work, you may not notice how hard you're working and how tired you actually are until you have a chance to sink your shoulders for a little bit and relax, whether you chose to or you had to. So maybe that's a good place to start our conversation today. You know, there's this popular peaks and valleys analogy where peaks represent extremely busy periods and valleys represent quiet periods. And I'd say in my book, valleys don't necessarily represent not having any work at all, because I think that that would be rather a dip. But valley in my mind is rather a slowdown in incoming requests. Like maybe there are just fewer than usual, but not entirely gone. So what do you do after a peak in work, when you worked hard for days or weeks, maybe even had to put in some late nights, and now you feel tired and need a break? What are some things you can do for yourself and your business when you're in that valley stage, when you have a little more time than you had before? So I think the first thing we need to remind ourselves of, and I have to do it myself, is to not overreact. After an intense work period, it may seem that work really slowed down, but it just feels that way in comparison to how things were just before. So maybe you could take a look at your financial goals for that month or that quarter and see where you are. Perhaps you did so well. If you had a busy period just before that, you can take a little break. You can afford it. And it has happened to me in the past. I also feel that we often feel bad about taking some time to rest and recharge because we own our own business and we may be prone to comparing how we are doing and how everyone else is doing and how busy everyone else seems. But it's important to take a break. And if you can afford to, and if you feel that you need this, you should take a break. Because as they say, you need to fill your own cup. And after a period of giving a lot of your energy and your knowledge and serving other people, you need to take care of yourself. So it's important to take a few days to do some things that make you happy. And if I have just wrapped up an intense project, I like to take a moment to review what went well and what I would change next time, both in terms of my own performance and how I interact with the client and other people involved, and things that maybe were beyond my control, but things that I felt didn't go so well, maybe. And sometimes we go through this work fluctuation so quickly that we forget to review our own performance and or how that project went. And I find that I'm more honest with myself during a quieter period, and I can answer questions like, what did I do well? What should I do differently next time? So that's very helpful. What about you, Madalena? How do you handle these situations?
Yeah, I really like your idea about stopping to take a step back and thinking about what can I do differently next time? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think that's important to do on a regular basis, but it's particularly, I guess it's easier to do when things are slow. And I think that that's one way to look at that period of rest and recharge and kind of recalibrating everything, is to say, you know, if you're always on the go, you know, at some point your work is going to suffer. The output that you create may not be the top quality because maybe you're tired. Right. So it's good to have these moments, right?
Yeah.
But it's like you said, you know, before, in the middle of it, it can feel like it's never ending, and it can be a moment when you automatically overreact. And some of us are just wired that way, I think, mm-hmm. where we think, oh my goodness, like, when's my next project coming in? But, you know, you made a good point about looking at your financial picture, because, you know, I think that in our work as freelancers, the, you know, one project in, one project out scenario has some people working, for lack of a better phrase, from paycheck to paycheck, right?
Right. Yeah.
And if we are thinking ahead and going, okay, well, I know that I had just had a very busy work period, I can set aside some money for when these slow periods happen.
Yeah.
And that's something that we talked to Susie Jackson about in a previous episode about financial habits. So if you haven't heard that one, we'll try to link to that in the show notes. You know, it's easier to talk about after you've gotten through the slow period, I think, sometimes, because you're right, when you're in it, that valley can feel very low. And I think, you know, I listened to what you were saying about the dip in work, when there's just slower incoming requests. But for some people, those valleys do mean absolutely no requests, right. Especially at a time like right now, right? We're seeing a lot of our colleagues who are basically have told us that their work has dried up. And we can't foresee these things, right? We don't know when they're going to happen, but they're bound to happen. That is the nature of life. So I think it's particularly important to have, when those times happen of slow periods, and I'm not just talking about, of course, this COVID-19 pandemic period, but some of the other times we're going to talk about, is just to really be proactive in using that time to kind of strategize and think how things will pan out for the future. And that's the way I like to look at it. And I will admit to, you know, that when my work slowed down at the beginning of the social isolation, mine did slow down for like a week. No, maybe about 10 days. And I did have a moment like, oh my goodness, nobody's spending money. And that's, you know, that's an extreme viewpoint, if you think about it. That was sort of that spiraling mentality of saying, you know, now I'm getting worried. And it's good to be concerned. Mm-hmm. It's probably not necessary to be worried.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. The concern should be there, of course, for the health of your business and, you know, your finances. But things do change, and, you know, the slow periods do pass. So I like to, as you were saying, kind of look at it from a proactive perspective and say, what is it I can do right now that when this period ends, my business will be better for it?
Right.
And there's a lot of things. So we'll talk about some of that. So one of the questions that we wanted to discuss was what to do in emergency situations like the one we're going through right now with COVID-19 pandemic. And so there are several things that you could be doing if your work is slow. And of course, even if it's not, I suggest doing these things. And one of those is to contact your existing clients. And, you know, there's a bit of a controversy about, you know, whether or not you should be marketing during this time. And my perspective on this is that you should always be marketing your business, no matter what's going on. But there are ways to do it with thought and with care and with compassion, and from a place of serving your clients and not from being salesy or, you know, overly selling anything. Mm-hmm. So when I say contact your clients, I'm saying, you know, check in on them, see how they're doing. Even if it's not during such a crazy emergency situation like this, you should be checking on your clients regularly, contacting them. Not only does it show that you're a true professional when you reach out to your clients on a regular basis, but it brings you back to the top of their mind, right? You're reminding them that you're there. And then also, I do believe that it's a good time in any situation to think about how you could market your services to new clients. And then this in the sense of, okay, yes, be sensitive to the fact that money is tight in many places, but money right now is not tight for everyone, even though it seems that way. That is not the case. So let's say you have a certain specialization where, you know, the industry really is suffering, like oil and gas, for example. Well, what other industry or what types of clients are actually doing well during a period like this where your skills could transfer over to be helpful to someone? Or what could you do to let those businesses or organizations that you would typically work for, whether they're existing clients or potentially new clients, what could you do to reach out to them and say, hey, I'll be here for you when things turn around and I'll be ready to help you to get back on your feet, you know, in putting your materials into whatever language you work into, you know, and sending your marketing message out to customers and things like that. You know, there is a way to come at this without, you know, being salesy. And I personally have received some very salesy emails from people pitching things to me right now. And I don't know that I would react any differently if it weren't during such a crisis like this, because personally, I just don't receive salesy emails well. So I delete many of them. But I have seen some. And so there are people who are kind of going that route. And I don't suggest that. I do suggest being proactive and reaching out to your customers. I actually wrote a blog post on this, which maybe we can link to in the show
notes. Yes, we should. Absolutely. It's really good.
Thanks, about how to gracefully and respectfully reach out to people. So if you're struggling with this, like many people are, I would suggest looking at that and getting some ideas there. But also, like I said, think about expanding your service offerings. Look at other areas where your clients may need you. And if you have to, you could think about pivoting in your business, even if it's temporary. And I talk more about pivoting in that blog post.
I like all of the points that you mentioned. And we all see examples of selfless behavior and acts of kindness from all over the place. And then we see examples of people trying to be salesy and trying to, you know, turn this into a business opportunity. So it's a good thing to take a look at those and see how you don't want to come across towards your own clients. I think it's also a great opportunity to turn to your colleagues and really spend some extra time on building some meaningful, great partnerships with your colleagues. And we've seen so many great examples of this among our translator and interpreter colleagues who are partnering up and offering a lot of online learning opportunities during this crisis and advice and tips and you name it. It's really inspiring. So I think there's a lot more room for partnerships like this, and they don't have to be sort of facing the larger translator interpreter community, but it may be just supporting each other in this situation and maybe doing something meaningful together or for your nearest community. But it may be very helpful. And we have a great episode about establishing professional partnerships coming out in June, which we're very excited about, and it will feature a special guest. You could also start an accountability group with other colleagues to tackle some professional and personal goals together. It may be more sort of rewarding and bring more results if you do it together with someone and you can support each other, maybe discuss things as you take, say, an online class together, or try to develop some maybe blog texts or some articles or something else that's been on your to-do list for a long time and you may just need some extra support and someone else to discuss it with. And there's absolutely no shame in taking this time for yourself and just focusing on your professional development if you have the time for it. There's so many amazing free and reasonably priced learning opportunities right now, and you could take this time to improve your skills in your area of expertise, maybe work on your translation or interpreting or writing skills, and just try to come out of this a stronger professional and be able to build a stronger service offering to your clients when we're out of this. And one more thing that could be helpful is to maybe take some time to take a beginner colleague, a recent graduate or a mentee under your wing and offer some advice and encouragement and some tips. Imagine if you had just completed, say, a degree in translation or interpreting and you were just about to start looking for work or just started out and then something like this happens. I think it would be very encouraging to hear from a more experienced colleague or maybe someone more established with more years of experience and get some moral support and maybe some tips and maybe some kind of accountability that way too.
Yeah. I really like that. And I personally really like the idea of the accountability group with other people. I'm not somebody who I often feel like I need an accountability partner, but it's just also very nice in these types of situations to remember that you're not alone and that other people right. experience the same things that you do. And so for that reason, I think it's really good to be in a group such as that. And I've seen several, at least right now, that are yes. really popping up. Mm. But I also really love your idea of tackling things that have been on your to-do list for a while. And I've seen more and more people saying that they are doing that and that they are kind of finally getting around to, you know, such and such on their list. And I think that's awesome that the people are looking at it that way, because it would be really, really easy to just say, you know what, I want to throw in the towel for now and see what happens on the other end of this. But, yeah. you know, that's just not a good perspective. And it's also not good for your mental health, I don't think, to think that way. But I think, you know, it is normal to feel badly about what's going on, especially during a slow period or a valley, as you like to call it. But I do think that it's that time period where you have to sit with it and you just have to feel whatever it is you're feeling and then move past it is really important, just to not get stuck in that for too long, right?
Mm, right. And it requires so much discipline on your yeah. part that I feel like you will definitely emerge from this stronger just because you were trying and you worked hard on achieving some goal, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it helps with also a good sense of purpose and yeah. everything. But so one of the things that's on a lot of people's to-do list that I keep hearing about, and because I talk about this a lot probably, but is to think about your website and your marketing materials. For many people, that's something that gets put on their to-do list at least once a year because, you know, these things need to be updated. They need to be maintained. They need to be relevant to your customers. And so think about what you can do, even if it's not maybe a total website revamp or a complete marketing overhaul or plan. What can you do to be creative about your marketing materials? It doesn't have to be expensive. You know, we are so lucky to be living in the times that we do that we don't have to think too much about what we are maybe using to send out our marketing message, because we can do it in such an inexpensive way if we want to, right? Yeah. With technology. And you will still need those marketing materials later. So now is as good a time as any, you yeah. know, during a slow period to develop those and think about who your ideal clients are and what is their business going to look like on the other end of this crisis. Like, nobody knows for sure. We don't have a crystal ball. But what we do have is the perspective of knowing that everybody is affected by this right now and they will need help. And so what can you put together now that will be, you know, that would speak to them in a marketing sense later and have them say, yep, I need this person to help me get back on track. And the other thing that, you know, with your website and any kind of written content for your blog or social media, your LinkedIn, your professional publication of any kind, if you want to even just write a blog for the industry or you want to write articles that your clients would find helpful, you know, what kind of content could you start putting together now if you have a slow period that people would find useful? Could you look at offering support to people from, you know, the content that you write? Your professional perspective on how translation and interpreting can support your potential clients during this crisis could be really valuable to your clients right now. It might be something they haven't even thought about, especially for interpreters, right? Because there's a lot going on right now in the interpreting world, and there's a lot happening with remote interpreting. And it would be really important, I think, for interpreters to be the ones to shape that conversation. So what could you do right now to prepare for the future? That's what I would say when it comes to anything to do with your marketing or your website.
Yeah, I love this advice. And I think a lot of organizations, they have a lot of questions themselves about what's going to happen next, because I think we, at this point, most everyone agrees that even when this crisis is over, our normal will not be the same normal, at least not for a while. Right. And things will have to change and things will have to be done differently for many different reasons. And I think it's a great opportunity for people who are curious and wants to learn more about their clients to read up more on what they're clients are thinking and talking about when it comes to the future. How will the future look like, and what kind of challenges and maybe vulnerabilities they have that you could help with and offer something of value to help them overcome those. This brings us to our next point of, talking about things you could do when your current clients become unresponsive, and how could you follow up with them and sort of nudge them in a nice manner, in a respectful manner, not being annoying or salesy, but bringing some value. And it's easy to feel like you're intruding or bothering them, but that's not the case unless you're actively bombarding them with emails and you seem desperate. You can prepare your message and sort of craft it in a way that is helpful and is not annoying. You can look up what's new with their company by doing some research online. You can check what the company is talking about in their maybe news and media section, their social media profiles, their LinkedIn accounts. See if there's an opportunity to congratulate them on something or praise them for something they're doing. In the future, when conferences and such start being held again, you can check if they're going to participate in an upcoming conference or a trade show, maybe send them a useful article and so on. And I think there's so many ways of finding content and ideas that would be helpful and that could make it easier for us to reach out to our clients and sort of nudge them gently, coming from a place of goodwill and service and not reminding, like, here I am, I need some more work, what's up? Right. And I think it's just like with marketing habits, like if you do it regularly, it doesn't seem so overwhelming. Right. So I think it's just staying up to date on a regular basis with the industry where your clients work will give you more insight into what's on their minds, what they're talking about, understanding them better, knowing what needs are coming up, in the pipeline, what's coming in the future that they may need help with. And that will sort of feed into your own content, be it an email or an article that could be helpful. And it may be equally sort of nerve-wracking to market to new clients right now, for the same reasons of, dealing with your imposter syndrome and not wanting to bother people. But you, like you said, if you come from a place of value and offer something that's helpful, it won't be salesy. It won't seem salesy, Again, not like, here I am, I'm available. Do you have any work for me? But yeah. I understand what your company does or what your industry does. I understand your needs, and here's how I can help, and offering something of value. I like to think of exercising. I personally am more willing to try a new exercise class when I am just physically active on a daily or weekly basis. It just doesn't seem so scary or overwhelming to try something new. And I feel that the same goes for marketing tasks. Like if you don't do it on a regular basis, it may seem nerve-wracking and you have all these questions about yourself and your own skills, especially if you feel that it's time to contact new clients and maybe look into new areas of opportunity. And it may be a good time to check your kind words folder or your praise folder, which we talked about in our episode on overcoming the imposter syndrome. And that would be a good way of reminding yourself about all your achievements and your qualities and your skills and what you're good at. And you can analyze what type of projects and what type of clients you really enjoyed working with in the past, and what is acceptable and not acceptable to you. And that would be a good input into the things you're looking in new clients.
Yeah, you totally read my mind. Actually, when you were talking, I was thinking, it's true that if you do it on a regular basis and you make a habit out of it, right. We are talking about smart habits, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't come across as salesy or, like over the top, but it also doesn't feel that way for you because you're used to doing it. You know what you're doing is helpful. You know what you're providing is, really valuable. And if you do it on a regular basis, then it doesn't feel as hard. Mm. But if it's, and I was thinking the exact same analogy with exercise, if you never run, but once a year, can you imagine how hard your run would be if you just tried it once?
Yeah.
And then you said, this is too hard. I'm not doing this ever again.
Right.
Right. And then
it's me.
You know, it is what it is. It's something that you start with it slowly and you do little by little, but you keep doing it consistently. Mm. And eventually you're going to be not only doing it regularly enough to where it feels comfortable, but it will be ingrained in you that this is just what you do as a business owner.
Right.
And this is just how you operate. And it doesn't feel hard, or, you know, the next step might feel hard, but you feel already that you've got that foundation to move forward with that next step. But what about just specific times of year when you know things are going to be slow? Because there are some times of year when we just know things are slower. And for everybody, it's a different time of year. I think it just depends on maybe your areas of specialization. I know for like financial translators, the beginning of the year is quite busy with financial reports and things like that. But maybe they have a slow point later in the year. And then for other translators, you know, maybe the holidays are extremely slow or extremely busy, right? But what do you do at those times of year when you typically have a slower workflow? So one of the things that you could think about doing is volunteering with maybe a local or national professional association. So they might need your help during one part of the year when your work tends to be slow. Or, you know, you could just lend your help during a time of year when your work tends to be slow and see what they have. Mm-hmm. Or just for a few months of the year on a special project. I think that for some people, the reason that they kind of hesitate to volunteer might be because they think that once they volunteer, like it's going to be expected of them the entire uh-huh. year or just from here on out, right?
Right.
But you can volunteer for certain things that are just short projects or periods of time, and then say, you know, when this project is finished, I need to get back to spending that time in my business. But right now I can help with this, or what would you need help with for the next 2 months or something? You know what I mean? Especially if you belong to an association, maybe that puts on a conference, there's always need for volunteers around the time of a conference and leading up to it. So those are the types of situations where you could not only do something for your association and for your profession, but you probably will receive something in return just intellectually, professionally, through your colleagues, you know, camaraderie and so on. So it's, it's actually a very good thing to think about doing during slow periods. Also, you could put on a solo business retreat. We talked about this in a previous episode as well, which I don't remember the number, but we can link to that as well in the show notes, about holding a business retreat. And you can do this even if you're in a situation like we are right now where you can't leave your home. You could take a day, especially if your work is slow, and look at the bigger picture of your business and see, you know, what it is that you would like to let go of, what you would like to do more of. Because, you know, these slow periods and this crisis we're in, they do come to an end. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
This can't possibly go on forever. So what could you do during your solo business retreat, even if it's just one afternoon, 2 days in a week? That would be something that you could do and spend time to improve your business. And that would be probably one of the most beneficial things I think you could do. It kind of makes me want to do another one now.
Yeah.
But, you know, also just thinking about the short term, not just the long term when you do these solo business retreats, you know, thinking about the short term, like the next few months, and thinking about the long term, the next few years, right? There's a big difference there. And like saying, okay, well, when something like this has happened, how can I pivot or how can I handle it, you know, productively? And then we already talked about, you know, putting your finances in order. I think that it's times like these when we realize I have done a really good job with finances and keeping things in order, or I could be doing better, right? It's those slow periods that remind us of that, like, oh, I should be putting more money into my savings, or I should have been saving more money for taxes or something like that. These are the times where, while they're maybe not fun lessons to learn, they are moments where we say, you know, the next time something like this happens, I want to be in a better position.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's important to learn from things like this, and to the extent possible, plan for the slow seasons. You know, of course, you can't plan for like an emergency situation or something. I mean, you could with an emergency fund, I guess, with your own personal emergency fund. But you can plan for the slow seasons, things, you know, come up around the holidays or the time people usually take vacation, or just when work normally slows down for you. And you could start acting early by checking how this aligns with your own personal schedule for the year. So you probably know what slow seasons to expect during the year. And so you can take that into account when preparing your own budget and setting up your financial goals or just general business goals. And, you know, if you don't know when and if your regular clients have a slowdown in work or take holidays usually, it is perfectly reasonable to ask them about it. I have done it in the past, and that's a good way to also stay top of mind. You could also check if it aligns with your own work schedule and you could sort of schedule your own time off during that time and not feel guilty about it and just enjoy it. You could also partner up with colleagues to offer your services together or find a joint project together. I have a few trusted colleagues that together we have formed a Russian Translators Collective last year. And it's been amazing to know that, you know, if one of us is on vacation, the other people are available to help, and we just stay in touch and refer clients to each other and just work together this way.
That's so smart.
We were inspired by some other colleagues who have the Black Squirrels Translator Collective and and some interpreters collectives that we've heard of, and we thought, you know, we need to do something like this. So we did that together. And also in terms of planning for the year, you know, if you know that there are certain seasons or times during the year that are usually slow, you could just set up your professional development plan, taking this into account and blocking out that time in your schedule for some daily or weekly learning and just breaking it down to manageable chunks of time that you have to sit down and maybe take a course or take a webinar or do like a larger course during that time. And you could do it alone, or you could invite some colleagues who have similar goals to join you and be each other's accountability buddies.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I think that, you know, we're so used to working by ourselves that sometimes we just feel alone.
Yeah.
We might think about, you know, talking to our colleagues maybe on social media or something, but it's like you said, forming a collective or partnering up with colleagues in some way, or, you know, sharing ideas on professional development. Hey, I took this course, you would really like this, or, you know, here are my notes from the last conference I attended or something. There's so much we can do for each other, and we're all in a very similar situation. So why not tap into what, you know, we can share with one another.
Right. So. And we come out of it stronger together.
Yeah, for sure. So to wrap up the summary of what we talked about today, you know, as far as dealing with slow periods, we suggest, of course, not overreacting, taking some time to rest and recharge during these slow periods, but also making sure that you understand for yourself that after an intense period, it's good to have time to slow down, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. We also discussed how to plan for things like emergency situations with your finances, with marketing your services to clients, how to contact them with compassion and respect during these times, as well as trying to establish professional partnerships, accountability groups, focusing on your professional development, and offering to help other people, maybe mentoring somebody. We mentioned talking more to your clients in a way that shows your value and offering whatever you can to maybe if you need to nudge them when they become unresponsive, to do that gracefully, but at the same time to do it with some value behind it, some service. We mentioned about your marketing materials and your website to be creative and to look to the future. What could you do to update your marketing and your website so that you are ready for when this slow period ends. Also, volunteering with a professional association, having a solo business retreat, and making sure that you keep up with your professional skills. So I think that's a pretty good list, I would say.
Yeah. So many options. And, you know, I think it's a lot of things that most people know about, but when you put them all together like this, it's like, wow, a quiet period, whether it's an emergency or just a general quiet period, does not have to be draining and scary. It can be inspiring and like empowering.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also really important during these slow times to just keep some perspective through it all. You know, maybe you should try to adopt the perspective that there isn't less work, but more time right now. It's good to not always be going, right? And it's important to have those times when you can slow down and take a step back. Like we said, look at the big picture. Think about what you really want to get out of your business and what you want to work toward. And also consider how you're going to take care of yourself when work gets really busy again and you don't have that much time. You know, kind of setting that foundation now. That's something that I actually am working on, which is not part of our smart habit check-in, but just honestly, I'm working on that right now myself, because stress management is one of the most important things, being able to handle things for the future.
Yeah.
When things do get busy, and even during the slow periods, your stress could be high. Right? And so kind of setting that foundation. Also thinking about the perspective of continuing to build up your portfolio of projects that you can showcase. Maybe you've done some really amazing projects in the past year that you could showcase in some way, maybe through a case study on your website, or, you know, asking your clients for testimonials during slow periods so that you have that available to you to use in your marketing materials. And of course, looking at your own to-do list or your personal projects that you've had on the back burner for a while. There's no problem with taking a little bit of time off work to work on some personal projects, you know, take advantage of those slow periods and look at what you could do that would maybe, as you like to say, fill your cup.
Right. Yeah. You have our permission to do that. Not that you need it. So we hope that this episode has given you some new ideas on how to cope with slower work periods and make this time work in your favor. We'd love to know if you happen to give any of these tips a try, or if you have some similar smart habits to share on this particular topic. Please send us an email at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com or leave a comment on our website under the show notes for this episode. And now it's time for a smart habit check-in. Madalena, are you working on any new or continued habits, and how's it going?
Yeah, I'm working on a habit that we talked about in episode 15 on sleep habits. Mm. It's not been a good sleep habit week for me, so I'm actually rethinking what I'm going to do to get better quality sleep and a little bit more sleep as well. There's been a lot of hectic things going on with work and personal life right now that I've just been juggling, and like everybody right now, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And so I've had some pretty restless nights, and I thought, you know, I really have to prioritize sleep. And so I'm looking at setting a regular time to start getting ready for bed, like we talked about in that episode, finding ways to unwind and have a nighttime routine. And also one of the things that somebody suggested to me recently was to keep a notebook. And we talked about this, but this is a little bit different. To keep a notebook on my nightstand, mm-hmm. not to write down things that I don't want to forget to do necessarily, which is, I think, kind of what we talked about, but to write down things that are causing anxiety or stress. And I don't think of myself as somebody who deals with a lot of anxiety, but we all do, right? I mean, yeah. It's just that I haven't labeled it that, probably. but it is a great idea, I think. And I just started doing it where, you know, before you go to bed, if you're somebody that has a hard time falling asleep because you're thinking about things that are causing you stress, is to just write them out. They call it a brain dump, right? Where you just mm-hmm. write out whatever it is that is causing you anxiety or stress. So you've put it out there, and now you can just let it sit. And it doesn't have to sit in your mind and cause you to just be thinking in circles in a spiral, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm just working on different things to improve sleep. I don't think I get terrible sleep, but it could definitely be better. So yeah. What about you?
So important. I need to refresh my own sleep habits and rethink some things that I'm doing. I feel like 1 week is a hit and the other one's a miss with many things these days, and sleep is one of them. But for now, I've been working on incorporating exercise daily just for my own sanity and just to keep moving. And I've been trying to make it a daily habit. Usually in the mornings, I'll wake up earlier than my kids and exercise either with my husband or alone. But recently, I joined a morning yoga challenge with some colleagues, and it's been amazing. Just knowing that there's a few other people all over the world who start their day with yoga, and we like report back to each other and maybe say what was our favorite part or discuss the affirmation that was mentioned in that short yoga class. It's been really good both for my mental health, I feel, and for sort of social life and exercise wise. So I'm really, really happy with joining that group. And I think it's one of the many examples of how colleagues can support each other during a difficult time like this, but also just on a general basis.
I like that. That's great.
So before we sign off, we also wanted to share one of our new segments called Smart Habit Hacks. This is where we share something our listeners have shared with us recently about smart habits, tips and tricks that they found useful in their work or daily routines. So Madalena, what smart habit hack are we sharing today?
So this week's smart habit hack comes from our Instagram followers who recently responded to a question that we posed after our episode on smart sleep habits, which was, like I said, episode 15, in case you didn't have a chance to hear it yet. And we asked the question, how do you quiet your mind before bedtime? This is kind of ideal with what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And here's what they said. Some people said that they use a guided meditation app like the Calm app. And I know there are a few others as well, but that's the one that comes to, I think, most people's mind is the one called Calm. One person mentioned that they like to make a bedtime tea and use a weighted blanket, which sounds really nice. And if you're not familiar with a weighted blanket, I don't have one, but I'm sure we could find one to put in the show notes so people know what we're talking about. And then someone else told us that they leave their phone in another room after 9 p.m., which I think is a really smart thing to do. So after 9 p.m., they put their phone in a totally different room and they don't pick it up. Mm-hmm. I love that people are sharing these simple hacks with us to lead to better sleep.
Yeah, it's amazing. I feel like we need to make a separate highlight for these smart habit hacks on our Instagram account so people can find them easier. I'll definitely be turning to some of those too when I feel that some of my habits need some extra help. Mm-hmm. And that's it for this week's episode. We'll be sending your email subscribers a checklist of all the tips and strategies we mentioned today to cope with quiet work periods. We'll send it out on May 12th. So if you'd like to receive it, please sign up for our emails on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com. And if you'd like to be notified when our episodes are released, you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to it.
Our next episode will come out on May 19th, and this is going to be an interview with another exciting guest, our colleague Matt Baird. Matt is a German to English translator based in Germany, and he's going to share with us how he's incorporated a four-day work week into his freelance translation business. We're really excited to learn more about how he pulls this off. Also, before we go, don't forget to enter our giveaway for the one-on-one financial mentoring session with Susie Jackson at smarthabitsfortranslators.com/giveaway. That's GIVEAWAY.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered a simple strategy that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover on this podcast, please record a quick voice message and email it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd love it if you would leave us a review and please share the podcast with other translators you know.